Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach.
Hello, one and all. Yes, a brief glitch there at the beginning, but hi. Welcome to Articulate Warbling with Zach and
Laura.
And today is another All Sorts episode. All Sorts indeed. Number 3. It's not going to be all sorts of emotion, but it kind of is. I'll let Laura take over from here.
So, just a quickie, today is the 3rd anniversary of my dad's death, so 22nd of August 2017. He sadly passed away from a blood clot to the heart, very sudden, very pain-free, at the age of 51, very sad, but I've had the, honestly, the absolute pleasure today of scattering his ashes, which I've finally got hold of, up in a lovely area of woodland in the southeast of England with my little sister, and we have chatted for hours and hours and hours, shared some food and some non-alcoholic drink and some cigarettes, and had a really good day despite it all.
The drinks were Appetizer and
Orange Fanta.
So if either of you would like to sponsor this podcast, please do.
Particularly Orange Fanta, because I love Fanta.
And I can't say Appetizer because I haven't tried it yet.
Me neither.
I want to, but I look at the price and I think, no.
Actually, it was the same as the Fanta, £2.80.
Yeah, but when you buy them from the store and those, like, bottles, it's kind of,
you
like,
know, maybe try it when we next go out to eat something.
Yeah. So, it's in memory of your dear Papa Bear, as you'd call him.
I would.
Generally, this year, is it any easier?
Wouldn't say it's easier. I think it's different.
Mm.
The last couple of years, I felt very alone. Felt very much like a lot of my family have kind of just dismissed me after the funeral. It was like, oh, okay, it's all done now. See you later. So actually to be able to reconnect with my sister and have that time with her has been more beneficial and more positive than actually the pain of the memory, if you see what I mean.
And you sharing your experiences.
Yeah, you know, reminiscing together, sharing the things that we remember together, and just having a laugh, really, and actually scattering the ashes felt more of a relief.
Yeah.
Because it was like, this whole time, he's been stuck up in a bag.
Yeah.
That's been sat in a drawer somewhere.
That has a label from the bloody place where the rest of his remains were used, like, so basically in the cast-off bag from whatever fucking...
Yeah, so he's just sat in a bag, and actually where the location in which that he was kept, those ashes were kept, it wasn't his home as far as we were concerned.
No.
He was Brighton born and bred, you know, he had his children in Brighton, we're all Brighton born and bred, near enough.
Mm.
And yes, I know I don't sound like I come from Brighton or the South East.
Yeah, could have fooled us, couldn't she?
That's because my mum was brought up in Buckinghamshire and she'll be buggered if she lets me.
Buckinghamshire!
No, darling, it's Buckinghamshire.
See, I fucked up even on the faux posh acting.
But yeah, for me, it was actually letting go of those ashes was that I've brought him home, and it wasn't actually sad emotional in any way. It was very much that relief.
Yeah.
I've let him into the place where he loved, we loved as kids, he took us all the time, and it was like my dad is home and he can be free in his home time, in his hometown and his home, just home.
That's the greatest, most beautiful way to see it, and I think it's a very special thing that you shared with your sister as well, and a necessary thing.
And I think the best thing was that in the UK we get the worst weather, and luckily it didn't rain, but what it was 50 mile an hour winds.
Yeah.
Which in some ways I was dreading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But actually when you've got these ashes in your hand and you want to let them go, if it wasn't windy and it was a really still day, they would have just fallen to the ground.
Whereas like a lead fucking balloon, yeah, type thing.
Whereas this, because it was so windy, it literally flew like birds.
Yeah, beautiful.
And it
poetic.
Was just like, it was... If you'd have recorded it, you wouldn't have seen it,
no.
Because it's like too fine.
But it's something very, very specific that is now to be concretized and immortalized in your memory with you and your sister. Mm. And it's like that special moment, things like that, where everything is perfectly aligned for this moment to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's beautiful.
Absolutely. And, you know, we just had a really, really, really lovely time. And we, you know, we've organised lots of things to do for the future.
Good.
We're both going to get tattoos in memory of our dad, in ways that are not, you know, dad.
Tacky.
From this date to that date.
Yeah, dad, forever blood.
Yeah, so, you know, for her, he always used to call my little sister his bear, his baby bear, or his moo bear. So she's going to get, like, a little teddy bear. And I'm going to get a tiger, because I was always his tiger. And also, for me, a tiger also represents not just my dad and that nickname, but also a tiger that earns its stripes. And I've been through a lot in my life. Mm. Not just dad passing, but a lot of things. So actually, having a tiger represents a lot more than just that memory. Mm. And then my sister's then thinking about also getting a small jelly tot. Mm. Because he always used to say, I love you lots and lots, like jelly tots. Mm. So she's considering getting a jelly tot. But we'll see. I think that might be a bit of a difficult one to tattoo.
Man. I mean, like...
I'd be wanting to, like, gnaw on my skin, like, oh, jelly tot. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, if you've, like, got the munchies and you're in and out of consciousness and you're like, oh, look at that, oh! No, I've got to say, well thought out ideas for tattoos, much unlike my own.
But this is the thing. She's got an uncle who... knows a lot of tattoo artists, is in the industry,
and
knows the best people to go to in the area. She wants to do hers for her 18th birthday as a coming of age sort of thing.
Mm.
So I said to her, I said, right, so that's your birthday present from me. And she was like, oh my God, no, you can't do that. Yeah. I was like, well, I can. It's not going to be 300 quid, is it, for a little tiny tattoo?
Well, I don't know how much their rate has gone up since COVID, but I don't think so.
But, you know, that for me is like, there's your 18th birthday present. We do it together. Neither of us can pussy out because we're together.
The greatest one, I think you should go to Holy Cow. What an experience. So great. Such a great environment. Lovely people. They really take on board what you want. And when I went there for my Hitchcock one, I've noticed, it sounds weird, I've got favourite arms, a favourite side. My favourite side is my right. But I've littered that with my most ill-thought-out tattoos. So now my favourite side is my left, which is my Don Quixote one by Picasso and my Hitchcock one. And the environment's just so nice. But then again, if she knows people's connections, that will make her feel more comfortable. Go for them.
And that's the thing. I said to her, I said, you book so that you've got two spaces together or shortly next to each other sort of thing. So we both go in. It's my birthday present to you. I buy, you know, I pay for yours. I pay for mine. And we've both done, so not only is it we've done something to remember dad together, but we've done that
first time
it's
thing
more bonding
together.
Thing together. And it's her coming of age, sort of 18, I can do things now.
Yeah.
And it's a birthday present. And actually, exactly. I thought that was the ultimate. I was just driving along and I was like, oh, instant, like, bing, light bulb.
Tattoos together.
Tattoos together. I'll pay for yours. It's your 18th birthday. And she was like, oh my God, yeah.
Do you want to pay for mine?
No.
Oh. No, that's really nice. Quick side note to the whole tattoo thing. When I went to Holy Cow, this is how I know how patient they are. So Molly, who was doing my Alfred Hitchcock one, shout out to Molly, legend. So nice, he offered to fill in my Slipknot tattoo.
Okay, hang
to
on, colour Molly's it. A guy.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Australian. I was under the impression for a minute there that Molly was a woman.
And he said... said, yeah, we can do that now. And I was thinking, I really don't want to fork out another 50 quid. And then after it, he was like, so, do you want to come in and have that filled in for free? And I'm like, fuck, I could have had that filled in for free. That's how nice Molly is. But from the other room, for about 40 minutes, I heard, ah, no, I don't like it. And the man said, that's the stencil. Anyway, again, she goes, oh, my God, ow, ow, ow. He went, I've just turned the tattoo gun on. And then you hear, and he goes, you ready? And she's gone, ow, ow! He went,
I haven't touched
again, I haven't started yet. And then...
See, I'm going to be the type of person that's like, don't tell me what you're doing, just do it.
But then all of a sudden, silent, and you can hear the gun, and you can tell the difference when it's not on your flesh and when it's on your flesh.
Yeah.
It's like a numb. And he says, you're all right. And she's like, yeah, I'm just texting my boyfriend. And he's like, how are you dealing with it? And she's like, dealing with what? Oh, my God! She didn't even fucking know that he'd started. Fucking idiots.
See, I wouldn't be able to watch it.
45 minutes. Oh, no, I love watching.
Oh, no, I think I'd pass out.
It's a nice sensation. It's heated. It's hot. It's hot.
don't like burning shit.
It's not burning, it's like...
Oh, but what's hot if it's not burning,
you know when you're scratching at a spot that's really like... And you're really going for it and you're like... Oh, but you know it hurts, but it feels good. It's a bit like that.
Okay.
But anyway...
I plan on having a very small tiger. Like, barely...
You just made me snot.
I need a magnifying glass in order to see my tattoo.
And all of a sudden, he's gonna. The tattoo artist is gonna go up to me, and he's gonna go, "Do you know why it's so cheap? Just make sure she doesn't ever wash in that spot." I'll be like, "Why? Like, I drew it on with biro."
Make sure she doesn't wash her ankle.
Ever, Laura, I've got this anklet, but that will hide my tattoo. Well, anyone needs a fucking magnifying glass to see it, love. Also, put this on; it will save it. But anyway,
moving on because we've just waffled for 10 minutes.
We digress. We wobbled. What's on the agenda?
Got a couple of reviews.
Yes.
So we're going to review... so we've done our how we felt about going to the cinema, and now we're just getting on with being at the cinema now.
Yeah.
So we are going to review Spree and Baby Teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to review the 10th anniversary of watching Inception.
The reissue.
Which I never saw originally, have kind of tried to watch it on TV and then actually went to go to the cinema recently, so cool. And then we're gonna talk, actually, and I think it segues quite nicely into what you want to talk about. I'm going to talk very quickly about some of the reviews I've read on some of the books that I've read recently. And the reason why I'm not going to review those books yet is because they are part of
a series
of books. Both books are. So I don't want to review them until I finish the whole series and then I can review them as a whole series.
Yeah, exactly.
But it segues quite nicely with those reviews that I've read on Goodreads with what Zach wants to talk about, which is around making mountains out of molehills. But let's leave that for now.
Molehills out of anthills, anthills out of atoms.
Atoms are huge.
I don't know.
Molecules.
Anyway,
Dust mites.
What, I always get this shit backward. I'm like, I've listened back to so many podcasts before.
Where you're sitting there going, I made a molehill out of a mountain.
Yeah.
And like, good for you, Zach.
Yeah.
No, that's not
yeah,
what I
exactly.
meant.
Exactly. All these different interviews. One where I sound like Darth Vader because all I'm doing is chain smoking, and actually, I didn't know that the microphone can generally pick up everything, and I had it right next to me, and you can hear. But me, like, I'm very stuck in my ways. If I pronounce something and it sounds good to me, I'll continue doing it.
Yeah, almond.
As you know.
Salmon.
I always pronounce faux pas as forks pass. It just satisfied me. And some guy was like, Zach, one is forks pass. Is it like some like fort? I'm like, forks pass. You know what I mean? This man's putting on a forks pass. He's like, faux pas. I'm like, you just made me look like a fucking idiot.
Mostly because you're a fucking idiot.
You're an idiot.
Anyway, let's go for Inceptions first. We're going chronological order and what we're in. So, shall I? So, like I said, Inception I hadn't seen really before. I'd seen kind of bits of it on the TV. And you remember the main bits, don't you? You remember when, like, the road goes upside down. And they just,
it like rolls like a, it's like a map almost.
And then it's
folding
like cake,
itself.
And it's like cake folding itself and then perfectly fitting.
A line and
each
it's
other.
Like a jigsaw piece.
And then they like walk along the road and then they just take a step and then they're walking flat, but actually they should be walking sideways. Mm. Anyway,
it's Nolan physics. It's physics defined shit.
Yeah, so you remember
the craziest
stuff.
Exactly,
stuff,
all the crazy set pieces, but you don't remember.
The little spinning top.
You don't remember the particulars. Like, I come from a point where I watched that film in the cinemas and I came away from it like, that was awesome. Did I really know what went on? No, because this is 10 years ago and I wasn't as a mature film viewer.
Yeah.
I was one of those like, I love movies. Well, why do you like movies? It's good. And that was it.
It's good.
And,
sorry,
this is something very particular. A film like Inception should only be experienced if you have like an 85-inch TV with surround sound in a cinema.
In a cinema room in like a mansion, or if you like you say surround sound with a humongous TV, all the lights off, no glare, no nothing,
mm-hmm.
And no pausing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, speechless, man. The more I sat and tried to think about it and make it complicated, the more confused I got. So I'm like, hang on, wait. Bring it back. Mm-hmm. Bring it right back to simplistic thinking. And sometimes you have to do that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I said this about my maths homework. I used to, like, really think so complex, like, oh, my God. And my mum was like, just look at it really simply. It's 2 + 2 = 4. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Just because you put an X in it doesn't mean that it means anything different, right? Don't worry.
Is that called algebra?
Yeah. Well, it's like x + x = 4, so it must be 2 + 2 = 4.
I bet Christopher Nolan is listening to this and he's wanking, going, yes, you're speaking my language.
Anyway, point is, the more I made it complex in my head, the more I'm like, I'm getting confused. And then I'm like, wait, stop. So I like bring myself back and I'm like, simple. And then I'm like, oh, I get it. It's weird. And this is the thing, I think dumb people go in like, this is going to be so complicated, that's why they don't get it.
People have, it's a new trend now where Christopher Nolan, he is an auteur, he is from the indie background, and he makes very artful, very dense movies, but on a cinematic blockbuster level. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone says that this is faux intellectualism. It's not
Sorry,
faux.
Is that faux or forks?
Forks intellectualism. People say it's faux intellectualism. No, it's just intellectualism.
Yeah.
People can't distinguish the differentiations. It has to be quarantined and sectored. You can't be artful whilst you're being a blockbuster. Christopher Nolan has proved that point different. You can have an artful, dense film. Like, what was I loved before this was there was like a mini introduction by Christopher before the film.
There was.
And he says, we live in an age now, he says, where you can watch Inception as I intended it to be.
Yeah.
It was in the day where digital presentation, like HD projections, were being introduced. Cinemas couldn't afford it. Mm. Whereas Christopher Nolan does still love the purity of film. I don't know if you've noticed with Tenet, they've advertised 35mm and 70mm, where it's actually still shown in film. But he is accepting of, you know, the transgressions of what's happening with cinema.
And the thing I love, sorry to cut in, the That's thing right. I love the most as well about his little introduction was the fact that the lack of use of CGI. Mm. Or very reduced amount.
Yeah.
And the thing that I loved, the reasoning behind that was because his idea is that you can watch Inception 10 years ago when it was brand new and up and coming, and 10 years later, and you couldn't tell that it is 10 years old.
And he does. He actually has that look on his face where he realises himself.
He's pleased with himself. Yeah. He's like, I was successful.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, other than the fact that we know Leonardo DiCaprio has genuinely aged 10 years since then...
Mm.
Other than the age of the actors, you could not tell that that film was made 10 years ago and it wasn't made yesterday.
No.
And that's what I love about it. And I love that reasoning. And it was so just simple and plain and not really complex and really like fucking with everyone's mind. It was very much, you know, like the film is meant to almost, isn't it? It was very against that kind of thought. It was like, literally, I used as little CGI as possible so that it ages less. And I'm like, literally in that moment... Those few words, I'm like mind blown, what the fuck? Then once I finish watching it, I'm like, shit, yeah, you're right. Because any CGI you have used is so limited that you can barely tell. And that is just phenomenal thinking.
Yeah, he has, and apparently Tenet is his least visual effectsified film. And I'm going to be so interested to see... how he continues. And what I love about Christopher Nolan in the sense is he turned around, he said, this film can now be offered to a generation of different people being introduced to it.
Yeah.
And he said also, on the level that it's meant to, the big score by Hans Zimmer. And you can tell that there's a glint behind his eye, because as soon as you get the title credits, those big bass drones, like those siren calls, and it's like, Christopher Nolan, young.
It's almost like Tenet is the new Inception.
It is.
In some ways, it's almost like, okay, so I did Inception 10 years ago, it was super successful, so now I'm going to do Tenet, and it's going to bring in much younger audiences, and it's going to interest people in my work that weren't interested before because they're too young to know about Inception, like me, and probably...
Oh, yeah,
like you-ish.
Like me-ish. I was aware of Nolan's superiority and what he was trying to do, but I just appreciated it on an aesthetical level than story-wise.
And this is the thing, like, when we look at our age, there is 2 years between us. Less than 2 years, actually, because, you know, of where the months that we were born kind of sit. But by years, it's 2 years, you know, 1995, 1997. But in that time, it's amazing. I will have been 13 when Inception came out.
Mm-hmm.
Way too young. You were 15.
Yeah.
You still feel you were too young, but not as young as I was.
No.
And there's so much difference in those 2 years when you go younger.
Yeah.
From 0 to 2, from 2 to 4. You know, all of that. When we get to our 20s, it barely matters. Yeah. 23 and 25, yeah, it's nothing. But when you look at it like that, it does. It will engage with you more than it will engage with me because you were that little bit older and a bit maturer.
And I was always a Nolan fan.
Yeah.
Also, with the reality of... the reality of that Christopher Nolan is so close, yet so far away in my personal life. Yeah. I don't know if I've mentioned it before. My...
Your mum's partner...
who I was raised to acknowledge as stepfather, is cousins with Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. I have engaged with some of the Nolans. Absolutely lovely. An amazing family. Amazing people. Unfortunately, they're related to...
A narcissistic
arsehole.
I mean, a lovely man.
No. Anyway, but I've always had that like love and better appreciation as well. Like,
it's almost like when it's closer, you love it more.
Oh, yeah. But like, I fanboyed the fuck out. Like, when he said, oh, my cousin directed Batman Begins, I was like, oh, what? And then fanboying...
Was that like...
for 8 years.
A Scooby-Doo moment where his eyes actually, like... Yeah, but, like, you know, when the cartoon eyes, like, spring out of the fucking...
Yeah, and I wouldn't shut up about it for about fucking 3, 4, 5 years until, you know, it dawned on me, you're probably only going to be in... professional contact with them on your own merits rather than...
You're more likely to basically hear from Christopher Nolan via this podcast.
Or, I don't know, he might think that my experimental, trippy, subconscious witlings has some worth to it. Anyway...
Unlikely! Sorry, what?
I've always loved Nolan's films. I always loved what he did with Batman. I always loved him as a filmmaker. Also, he was at a stage where it was cool to like Christopher Nolan. It was one of those things, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now it's cool not to like Christopher Nolan, which I think is just, come on, get over yourself, get over it. It's not faux intellectualism.
I don't like this whole fad of, like, because there's recently, and I'm not going to go into this much, but I'm just saying about fads. There's a fad at the moment that everybody should hate on Dolly Parton because, is it Dolly Parton? She's still alive, right? It's Dolly Parton then.
What, 9 to 5 one?
Yeah, because she has said... outwardly on Twitter that she supports Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
So now everyone's hating on her. And I hate...
because she's a Texan white woman.
But I hate the fact that it's now a fad. You must not like Dolly Parton because... well, I'm sorry, but unless they have physically hurt me or hurt me in any way or offended me in any way, I will like or dislike whoever I choose.
Yeah.
Not for because Twitter told me to.
Yeah.
And that's what I hate about fads. And that's what I mean when you say about, you know, it's a fad to like or hate a certain person. Get a fucking grip.
Get a grip.
If you like a person and you like their films, you like them.
Yeah.
If you don't like a person and you don't like their films, guess what? You don't like them.
Yeah.
It's not hard. We do it in everyday life.
Yeah.
You see a human, you meet them, you're like, I get on with you. I like you. But because my friend doesn't like you very much, I've got to hate you. No. You can make your own fucking decisions, man. Anyway, sorry.
It's like that... I'm an experimentalist, I'm part of the indie punk rock scene, and it's cool to love movies by Cocteau or Bornell. I love those silent films, I love foreign cinema. I watch Christopher Nolan's movies and I'm like, fuck you, bitch, shut the fuck up.
And it's very similar with some of the... excuse me, I'm ever so sorry. That came from the pit of my being. And it wasn't out loud, which I was quite proud of.
A belch.
It was a belch indeed.
A faux pas of a belch. Faux pas belch!
Some of the authors that I read are considered to be very girly. I don't like that.
Of not literary value.
Thank you, which I'll go on to later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing. Oh, because it's a certain genre, because it's a certain person that writes a certain way, because their prose is written in a certain way, you must be a girly girl. No, I like Jojo Moyes. That does not mean that I dislike anything else. It frustrates the fuck out of me. Don't label me. Yeah. Do not put me in a box.
Yeah.
I do whatever the hell I want because I'm human and I like or dislike or hate or love anything or anybody that I want to.
There's people who like twirl their invisible pencil moustache and they're like, I read classic literature. I put my Ben Elton books next to William S. Burroughs. I put my Hunter S. Thompson next to my Irvin Welsh. I put my Philip K. Dick next to Tom Robbins and Martin Amis. I put my John Ronson next to Franz Kafka and Joseph Heller.
I put two pillows under my head when I sleep.
So what? But people would go, oh, what a weird decision. Is there? Are you trying to say something?
Is there an artistic value in the way you have ordered your books? Yeah. No, I like is it there, looking that
is
way.
Is there a deeper connotation why Stephen King is below Mac Lucas and Experimental Men and in the desert of Mute Squares? No, I just put them in height order.
To be honest, exactly. My hardbacks are together.
And it's politicised.
My card covers are together. Why? Because they make sense to be together because they're the same sodding height. Mike, drop.
Now, whilst we're here, what were we saying earlier about books? We'll get back to Inception. We've taken a detour. Book sizes.
Oh, man. So, we, through sweat-drenched press, nearly said SDP and realised I need to say the full name, also known as SDP, have released some books recently, and we go for a 5x8, although one seems to have slipped the net on that one. And we were talking earlier about how it is so frustrating that books are different widths and lengths. Now, it depends what you look at as width. I'm talking about when you look at a book flat on a surface, the width is from one side to the other, the length is from the top to the bottom, okay? When they are different sizes, you can't put books on top of each other. You can't put books underneath another one without it looking stupid. You end up balancing other books precariously on top of the other ones because they're smaller or they're bigger, and then you have to put them in a stupid height order that doesn't quite sit right because it doesn't sit right in the series of books, or it doesn't sit right properly in your bookcase. It drives me nuts. Zach's gone for a wee. I don't even know what to say or where I'm going with this conversation. He's just fucking ditched me. Rude. He's not even listening. Anyway, point is, make books all the same size, please. Just because aesthetically it's really pleasing to have books that are all the same size. And aesthetically pleasing books make me aesthetically pleased, funnily enough.
Sorry that I left you in the lurch there. Sorry.
I managed to wobble my way through.
You did, though. I was very proud. You literally hit on something.
I had a moment where I was like, I can't do this. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, aesthetically pleasing. It's aesthetically pleasing. The thing is, and you have to remember this, with my words, with the super-duper meds that I'm on right now, my words don't work, so I need you to sometimes chip in to give me my words, and then you're gone, and I'm like, no!
That's fine. And half the time, I probably won't even get the right word or pronounce it right. Now, back to Inception. We've reached a time now where we've grown up and we've matured, and Nolan basically acknowledges this. Also, cinema has basically caught up with the standards that he believes that cinema and film should be shown.
Ow.
You all right?
That stung my fingers and my lips.
I've been inhaling recently, and it seems to be like getting into my teeth. It's really weird.
What do you mean you've been inhaling recently? Like you've never inhaled before?
No, when I inhale, it feels like the smoke is going into my teeth. And they feel like they're growing translucent?
They're not. Just don't inhale with your teeth. Cover them with your lips.
Okay.
Anyway, look, Inception is a 5-star film, okay? Because I think we've warbled on for far too long about it. It's a fucking epic film.
See it in the cinemas. It's dense. Also, you have to see it in the cinemas. I always kind of like went, I don't want to go near it in a DVD because it's not the same experience, is it?
No.
It isn't.
Even on Blu-ray, it's not good enough.
No, I remember I watched it on Blu-ray and I just wanted to see the special features, and they had this movie, this watch a movie in a movie. It's the early stages where you had the full movie of in a tiny box with the behind the scenes stuff. So I was like, fuck this, I'm discounting Inception. And then I was kind of thinking, do I like Inception? I loved it when I first saw it. And seeing this, it reaffirms something.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It reaffirms your love. Reaffirms your love.
Nolan, he is amazing visually. Also, people who criticise him for not being an action director, what the fuck are you on about? The majority of the films he's done is action-orientated. Oriented.
Orientated, you're not American.
Orientated. And he said, I really appreciate that. And he actually said, I can't believe Warner Brothers went ahead and let us release a movie this dense. Well, Warner Brothers continues to allow him that freedom because he makes him enough money. Also, he has that creative freedom. And I love Nolan. He uses his money and puts his money where his mouth is towards his film productions. It's epic. It's in your face. It's actually very emotional. More emotional than I initially remember it being, centred on the relationship between Leonardo DiCaprio's character and Marion Cotillard, who keeps like plaguing his dreams. The film is all about dreams within dreams, the subconscious, and planting things. It's an espionage film, but on a deep, deep, dense, psychological, action thriller heist, mind-melting, warping visual vista experience. It's about the subconscious, it's about the dreamscape. It is just sensational. 5 stars. See it.
In the cinema.
Yes, and if on Blu-ray, just make sure that you have a big TV, and a really good sound system. Hans Zimmer's score, oh my god, literally it made my balls shrink up, and I was like, oh my god, my balls haven't been this small since I was 2 years old.
If I had balls, they'd be shrunk.
So, Inception, 5 stars. If you have not seen it, see it. And if you've kind of veered in that direction where you've been listening to a lot of wrong people who keep trying to tell you how to view this director, that director, just go in with no expectations. Go in and watch it.
Stop listening to people who tell you that things should be the way they believe it, because it's wrong. You believe what you want to believe.
I like that. 5 stars for Inception. Now, a bad review, or should we go in?
Let's go in chronological order. Okay, so a film I think I was more interested in than you.
You thought the trailer looked really shit to begin with.
I did, and then I saw another trailer, and it was the trailer where they picked better bits to kind of
the
go...
The mini adverts on Facebook type thing.
It's the mini adverts on Facebook that also have the overlay of, oh, the Times said it was 5 stars, or whatever, that's an example, I can't remember who it was that scored what. Look, a film that I really thought, okay, they're just putting shit movies out right now to get people into the cinema, okay? So, I think I did kind of... I think we were both a bit like, yeah, don't know.
Well, they're doing things at the moment really clever with the cinemas, where films that usually would not get the screen or the time space that they are...
It's more indie type.
Mm-hmm.
I think indie might be a little bit...
No, it is indie. Okay. But this one is art housey. Yeah. Than your usual.
But it's the sort of thing that you'd see at the depot in Lewis.
Yeah.
Not in a Cineworld
cinema,
right?
Like a picture house independent cinema that is notorious. Not a big cinema like Cineworld that caters to the general masses.
Your blockbusters.
Exactly. And it's a type of movie that you probably would only see at the cinema if it gets Oscar buzz. Like Parasite and such and sundry. Yeah. And even certain films that get Oscar buzz don't get put in cinemas like
but
that.
But to be fair, it's like Parasite. That wasn't really a big thing in Cineworld. And then all of a sudden...
2 months later after...
Bam! Everybody's seen it. Why did you see it? Oh, wait, because they won an Oscar. Hang on a minute. Why didn't you watch it beforehand? And so I had so many arguments, and I think we've said this on a podcast before. I had so many arguments from people where they're like, I saw Parasite. I'm like, did you see it before or after? And they're like, after they won the Oscars because it won the Oscars. I'm like, I hate you. Don't watch a film because it won a sodding Oscar.
Luckily enough, we saw it in a Cineworld, but because it's a much bigger, broader Cineworld, they have more screens to fill up with films like this. Anyway, lesser known films are getting an opportunity to go on the big screen, like Pinocchio.
Yeah.
The 2019 version, which was acquired by Vertigo Releasing, and out of the blue, they're like, I think this is a good children's film to put out for people, also for the fans. Also, a film that would not actually get a cinematic release in any other given time.
Exactly. So, Baby Teeth. Should I do a short synopsis?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so girl falls in love with a rat bag.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a rat tail. So.
Drug addict, super mullet situation. bit of an arse, really. Don't really like him. Mum's in therapy and is in on a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Dad is a psychiatrist, gives the mum loads and loads of drugs. Then, like, plot twist, because I didn't realise this in the trailer, the girl has cancer.
I didn't know that.
No. And it's all about... That's not obvious in the trailer at all, is it?
No, not at all.
So,
just about a girl wanting to, for some odd reason, spread her wings and become rebellious and that...
And
the
love
guy,
this guy, this disgusting guy.
Who's in the form of the rebellion that is catering to her. And the reason is she's dying pretty much of cancer.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why I say this guy is a ratbag is not just because of his mullet, but because he is a drug dealer. A drug taker. He's a drug addict.
And dealer.
And dealer.
Thief.
He is a thief. He is, you know, totally uneducated, wants to go and just create havoc, bit of an arsehole, doesn't really care about anything but where he can get his next fix. And he's got tattoos in the wrong places. I'm sorry. Anyone that has tattoos behind their ears, on their ears, or on their neck is no from me. Because I just don't like it.
Sorry, rag and bone man.
Yeah, but there's tasteful and there's not.
Yeah.
And this was not. Anyway, it was a film that we both went in and predicted 3 stars.
I was veering towards 2 to 3, yeah.
Yeah. And then your rating afterwards?
5.
And mine was 4.
Mm.
Why? Not asking you why mine was 4, I'm asking you why yours was 5.
It was unexpected, it was unpredictable, you didn't know where it was going to go. You said something very interesting that you don't realise until you come out. Your loyalty shifts with each character, with
significantly
every given moment. It's surprising, it's unpredictable. At one point, I felt that the usage of the camera and the cinematography and the lighting was going to make me barf.
Can I just say, very quickly, I've referenced it a couple of times, currently taking quite a bit of medication for back pain, which hopefully is going to be sorted soon. And the medication I take makes me feel a little bit dopey and a little bit dizzy as it is. So some of this camera work was...
Is it me or is it the film?
It was, because usually the walls spin.
Mm.
And I was kind of hoping that maybe if the walls were spinning and the camera's spinning, then maybe it would, like, outspin itself and re-equilibrium situation. Mm-hmm. It spun me out further.
Mm.
And, like, you were sitting there like, I'm going to bath, and I'm sitting there like, I think I'm about to, like, not thinking my
well,
feel a bit nauseous.
Did
I'm
I,
like,
was it in the cinema? Did I turn around and say, is this bothering you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, in the UK right now, we have to wear masks in the cinema unless you're eating, and by halfway through the film, you're not eating anymore, are you? You know, we have to wear masks. It's hot. It's not, you know, well, there's a bit of air conditioning, but it's not, you know, you've still got a mask. You're still quite sort of pent up in your face and not really been able to breathe freely. I agree that it's a good idea to wear masks, but it just adds to that extra almost suffocation and situation where you just feel a bit out of control.
Yeah.
And I think also there's genuine fear for me that if I'm sick, it's going to go straight back into my face with a mask on. So as much as I agree with masks, this film is not one to wear with a mask or anything else. You need to be okay, don't you? You need to be like A-okay. You don't need to feel a bit rough.
It's not throughout. It's a certain point.
And they use it in the right times, but I just think on that day we were both just in a position where we were like, I don't think we can handle this camera.
I was sweaty and disorientated as it was because of the mask there.
Exactly.
But the film is beautiful. The performances, Ben Mendelsohn is in it, who is a fucking sensational actor.
I was not expecting this film to make me cry.
This film made me sob.
Yeah, Zach was sobbing.
I'm not going to give anything away. The film is... It's going to live on as a timeless classic. It deals with things irrelevantly. It doesn't deal with certain big... The big issues in it aren't tackled at all. It's the small, intimate, but not really intimate moments between characters and exchanges, which is, you know, in the wake of any awful event, is going to be a thing that you will remember. The film is a great... It's orchestrated beautifully, as in, it's always the small moments.
I think as well, what's lovely is that often when there's almost a cliffhanger at the end of the film, I'm kicking them. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
But with this, there was a kind of cliffhanger, wasn't there, without giving anything away. Mm-hmm. There was a sort of cliffhanger because you're not quite sure exactly the events and the way things work, you know, at the end.
It's cleverly orchestrated.
But I didn't come out going, fuck you.
No.
Like I did with Inception, where the spinning top is spinning and you never really know. It's that thing where I came out and went, actually, I like that because it is thought-provoking. The whole time
and it makes
like,
you cast your mind back to certain glances, certain interactions.
And it's like, was it this? Was it that? Was it this? Was it that? And I love that because for people like, I mean, for people that aren't like us, boring. But for people like us, I'm not saying they were boring, they're boring. I am really. But I'm saying, like, for them, they're like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. For us, it's like, well, what about my theory? Well, I've got this hypothesis that blah, 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 blah. And you're like, well, I've got this hypothesis, blah, blah, blah. And we either agree with each other or disagree. Yeah. And it actually, it does. Not only does it provoke thought, but for people like me and you, it provokes a conversation. Mm-hmm. Oh, what do you think happened? Yeah. What do you think happened? What did you add up? And actually, I think anyone that goes and watches that could have a different viewpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that. If you are smart enough to talk about something afterwards, which a lot of people aren't, unfortunately, but people like us...
Sadly.
But people like us can genuinely come out and go, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but I think this. Yeah. I mean, we pretty much agreed on what we said. Yeah. Yeah, we did. We agreed on what we thought would be, you know, what made sense. But I love the fact that anybody could come out with a totally different opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, if they were willing to bloody well talk about it and think about it, quite frankly, it would be really interesting to see the huge plethora of all these different viewpoints, because it is, it's so totally thought-provoking.
It's also fucking hilarious.
It is. It is.
It is
funny in the most inappropriate ways.
Darkly comedic.
Yeah, it is.
Gallows humour. And it's one of without those... being directly... jealous about it.
I mean, you're never going to get, with six people in the cinema, two of us were us, two of them were us, you're never going to get a whole chorus of laughter.
Not a Greek orchestra, no.
No, but nobody laughed.
No one laughed, no one cried.
It was us.
It was just us.
We were just sat there near the front like...
We were the Greek chorus. We were the people exhumed. But the thing is, they probably went in expecting it to be
a blockbuster
or a rom-com type thing.
Yeah.
What I mean about this movie, it's built up of small moments, meaning those big extreme melodramas, that blueprint that you get from rom-coms or dramedies, those big moments, the big gag, the big laugh, the big cry, the big revelation. It is a movie built up of small vignettes.
Yeah.
I love also the headings.
Yeah.
But you had one little issue about that. It went from...
Yeah, so the headings for me went from a description of the scene, basically. Mm-hmm. This is what's happening. So this is where somebody met, or this is, you know, it's kind of like if you were to describe us right now, if we were in a movie, I'd have a little title that would say... podcasting or something like that to explain what we're doing, and that's what it starts off with.
We're coming into what to expect from this certain, but then because it's built up of those small moments.
Yeah, but then it moved because this film is quite switchy, and when I say switchy, it's not the right word. No, that's it's just my word. Yeah, I'm going to own that word. And when I say switchy, I mean it kind of cuts scene to scene, and it's kind of clunky, but I like it.
Yeah,
clunky in a good way. And that's why I liked the titles to start with, because you kind of went from this scene, and then it was really obvious when we clunk and move, that kind of cog turn.
Mm.
It was very obvious that we were turning that cog and moving to the next scene, but that title kind of almost neatened it up.
Yeah.
But we went from an explanation of what the scene is and what's going on to an explanation of emotions, and I didn't like that.
I thought it was a natural progression, though, of what was going on.
I understand your viewpoint, and I can half agree with you, but for me, I am very, I don't like to use OCD because I think it's a bit strong, but I'm very, if you're going to stick with a layout, stick with it.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I see that.
So I'm kind of a little bit, like I said earlier about the books, I'm very much the type of person that likes to be aesthetically pleased.
Yeah.
And for me, that
it's
aesthetic...
It's a clunky film, though.
I know, but that's not enough for me. You have clunky in one way, and then you have something else that is continuous.
Yeah.
And that you maintain a continuity with certain things.
Yeah.
I don't like... If you're going to have clunky scene changes and have something that helps that kind of almost ties it up into a neat little bow, keep that as continuous as that continuity all the way through. So when I say OCD, I mean, like I said, I like things aesthetically pleasing. And I don't necessarily mean when I look at something and I'm like, that's aesthetically pleasing. When I'm watching something, I struggle when things are clunky, but those titles were really helpful and I really liked that. But when it moved, I'm like, we're going down the wrong road here.
Mm.
And I didn't like it because it was almost like I was being told what the scene was, which was helpful, and then I was being told what emotion I should be feeling, and I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will... Telling me what the scene is fact, almost.
Mm.
Telling me what emotion that should be felt is up to me.
But half the time, those tarot cards were really conflicted with what was actually playing out, though.
Yeah, okay.
But I understand completely what you're
saying. That's what I mean. I understand what you're saying, but for me, it just... That's what took it from a 5 to a 4.
To a 4?
Yeah.
I highly recommend you go see it.
Yeah.
I think more people should see it. It's not...
I think the more people that see this, the better it's going to get making its budget back and being more popular, because it is such a wonderful...
And making the norm for these types of films. Yeah.
It's such a wonderful film, and films that are considered to be art house and indie shouldn't be knocked off as... I feel like the use... And this is the thing, it's another thing I think I've spoken about before. I hate the use of some words. Okay, and one of those words, in some ways, is indie. And the reason why I don't like it is because the connotations behind it. If it's indie, it's weird. It's strange. It's only for a select few people that like indie.
Mm.
Okay, and that's why I don't really like that word. Because I feel like it's almost derogatory.
Yeah.
I understand why it's used, and I think it's right to use that word. But the connotations behind it by us normal people, which would be considered to be me at times, I don't think that's right. Indie is just another genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another thing to market a film. I don't think it should be watched any less or appreciated any less. It shouldn't be appreciated any less than a blockbuster should be. Because actually, Baby Teeth was a fantastic film, a 4-star film, and it was an indie film. I can then go and watch another film that's a 3-star film and it's a blockbuster.
Mm.
There shouldn't be a differentiation between those. And these films should not be put out just to get, just to hope that somebody might come into the cinema to get some more business.
Mm.
Don't put indie films out because we're desperate and we're trying to target those people that are likely to have come to the cinema anyway because they're nerdy or geeky or like the indie underground scene. Don't target those people because you know they're going to come to the cinema. Target the fuck out of whatever the fuck you want to target to everyone.
Yeah. Agreed.
Sorry, I'll get really uptight about things like that.
Baby Teeth, 5 stars from me.
4 stars from me.
Next is Spree.
Shall I do a synopsis or do you want to do it?
No, I don't
want
to do it.
I'm good at synopsis.
You are.
Synopses? Whatever. Right, Spree. Basically trying to tackle some issues around social media, trying to get more followers, so on and so forth. This man basically signs up to an alternative version of Uber, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's
a social thing.
Yeah. So he has a car and he's going to drive people around using his Spree account. He's a Spree driver. He's an Uber driver. It's just called Spree, okay? It's a taxi, isn't it? For the UK people that don't know what Uber is, it's a taxi service. It's all online. And that's it, basically. He sets up a number of cameras in his car and then kills people in some weird and wonderful ways in order to get more followers on Facebook and to go viral. Which, when you watch the trailer like I did, I said that looks shit. Mm. Zach said that looks awesome, I want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to recall giving it 1 star.
Yes.
I seem to recall you gave it 2.
No, it's gone down to 1.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we agree then. So, Articulate Warbling says Spree is 1 star. look, you've got films that are over the top, like Final Destination, and they are good because they are so over the top. And
they
they're
own it.
Yeah, they are parody. They're over the top. It's really so shit that it's funny.
Mm.
And then you've got films that are more real, more genuine, more actual murders that are like, fuck, that you actually murdered that
well,
person.
Well, they're catering to a certain thing. It's talking up on an issue of the conglomeration and over-infatuation with streaming, likes, loves, about the new form of continually streaming your life events and getting hits and being loved and being notarized and being this name, hashtag this, add me on that. It's about the degeneration of our youth.
Yeah.
Via the of the exposure to social media and its intoxicating way. It is new, the new addiction, the new obsession. And we have seen through society people like the Cat Killer, numerous people who have followed in this vein. This movie is trying to capture that, but from a more personal intro. I can't get my word out. It's a satire, ultimately. It is satirising something, but talking upon vital issues in a sense of things have gone this way, things can go this way. It is a satire, it is a comedy, it is a mockery, but really great idea, executed terribly.
And this is the thing, like I was saying, you've got films that are very over the top, like Final Destination, that are just so ridiculous they're funny. And then you've got films that are very genuine with their murder weapons and genuinely sick. Like, you can look at it and go, oh my God, people have actually done that.
But what it is, is
Spree is like in the middle. Some of it is OTT, but not OTT enough to be Final Destination.
Or OTT enough to be like a B-movie grade type thing. Or
too much gore, too much this, too much
that. It's not self-aware in the sense, though it likes to think it is, but it doesn't go over that mark enough for you to go, okay, filmmakers.
It's almost like
they are trying to be sincere whilst being so insincere.
That's what I mean. They're trying to get a mix between factual
doesn't work.
And Final Destination.
Factual and
over the top. Ridiculous.
Fantasy, yeah.
And they're like in the middle. So you'll get some really gory moments, but you either need to go less on the gore because it needs to be more sincere, or you need to go OTT with the gore because you need to be OTT. And it's almost like it's self-aware that it's not self-aware.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
You either be self-aware or not self-aware. Yeah. You choose one. And it's, again, one of those middle parting things. Yeah. It's like, we're aware that it's not self-aware, but we're going to make it look like we're self-aware at some points and then not
others. It is too sincere in moments. And I feel that the sincere moments is what hit me the most. When the officer's killed.
You're absolutely right.
When the young man's killed. It works when it's sincere and it's treating the content right. Also, it's talking upon, I think, also things of people like trolls, certain sectors, racism, discrimination. It talks about very clear, definable things. But sometimes the gore, sometimes some characters are played. The main actor, very good. But sometimes he doesn't help the fucking story. Because is it a cartoon character or is it a sincere, you know, deep gut thing that you're watching this kid so desperate you kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
He's so lonely that he's seeking affirmation through an audience who generally are mocking him, calling him a faggot. They are the discriminatory people discriminating against him, though he thinks he's doing the right thing by his actions. All that is so compelling. But it goes from Looney Tunes sometimes to that sincerity. You should have stuck with the sincere things. That's when it worked for me.
Yeah, me too.
The ending, that was when it was like, why? When he was going after the in the field, sincere. And then when it ends up going into the house, it's
lost it.
Like the dad, like David Arquette, I watch and I'm thinking, don't think David Arquette's a good actor. Thought he was suitable for this. Fell into fucking parody and ridiculousness.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Either choose parody or sincerity. don't try and find the middle ground because there isn't one.
Didn't work. Did not work. One star. Also, whoever put that quote that it's like American Psycho, rewatch American Psycho, you fuck.
You psycho.
You psycho. What look, comparison what made him think that?
I don't know. There's not much else get to butts say, in to seats. Be honest.
Don't watch it.
It's a one-star film.
Watch it if it's for free on Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely. It should have been a Netflix movie that you turned off halfway through. One star from Articulate Warbling for Spree. So, shall I talk a little bit about...
Please do, go into it, please. Because I think it's really interesting. It really angered me the other night so much I had to walk away from you about it.
Do we need to...
Context.
Two-part it, or are we alright?
I think we'll be alright.
Okay, so look. I'm not going to review these books because, like I said earlier, they're part of
Do you need your phone?
A number of books. What's the thing when you call a number of books?
Book series.
Thank you. Series. Jesus Christ.
You've been firing all cylinders so far. You're all right.
Yeah, my meds are kicked in now. That's why. Right, so I've been reading books that are part of a book series, so I don't want to review the books because I just want to review them as wholes.
What's
going to tell you?
So
No, it's not over there. Where the fuck is it then?
It's not over there either.
Nice. Well, I've lost my phone. But
it's there.
I have been reading, I have read Me Before You by JoJo Moyes, and I have read Twilight and New Moon, and I'm currently reading Eclipse by Stephanie Meyer. I went onto Goodreads to look. Basically, I was just updating my progress on both of the books at different times, and I started reading reviews mostly because I know the storyline, so I'm not too bothered about the fact that, you know, they're going to be. Oh, it's really low. You know that I know the story; it's not going to be ruined for me particularly by reading the reviews. Now, there's this one person, actually it's two different people for different books, that, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to find it, took the liberty to review the books based on the prose of these two writers. Now, it's relatively well known that Stephanie Meyer is meant to be this terrible writer. She's not that bad, okay? I love people like Cecilia Ahern, and for me, every book I read, I compare to Cecilia Ahern. But I can take moments where I say, that book by Cecilia Ahern wasn't as good as this book by Cecilia Ahern. That's mostly my kind of, my comparison, if you like. But what really frustrated the living hell out of me is how this woman was talking about prose in a way in which she was suggesting she knew what prose meant, and I felt like she didn't. So I'm just going to try and find this specific review that I was referring to.
What, did you leave a comment?
I didn't, no, because other people shut on her, so I was like, actually, I think enough people have shut on her.
I just thought you would have commented just to mark it to know that you...
No, I didn't.
Is this the same one? Found it?
Yeah, okay. So this is about Me Before You, which is an absolutely beautiful book. And this woman was desperate to tell everyone about how the use of things like I was holding my breath that I didn't even... I let out a breath I didn't even realise I was holding. And apparently using that on a number of occasions is not okay. And I I can't quite understand what it is that she didn't like about the book, because she just rambles aimlessly and doesn't actually make any points. Now, even Zach and I have had this conversation, sort of like mid-tiff, about how I hate it when somebody says, I hate this person, or I hate this, and I'm like, why? And they've got no good reason. They just hate them. I'm like, that's not good enough for me. If you don't have a reason behind something, don't fucking say it. And it really frustrates me. If you've had a bad experience with something, then say, I don't like this person because I've had a bad experience with them, whereby this happened. Okay, I understand you must be angry by that. I understand. You move on. But she's like, because JoJo Moyes mentioned the fact that somebody was holding the breath that they didn't even realise they were holding on two occasions throughout a 400-page book, that's not okay, apparently. Apparently, that means her prose is a bunch of shit. And I
you're clawing your face. Give me an example of this review. This review. This is the type of person I've happened across of whom wants to exhume their superiority and their well-readedness. Their well-readedness, their intellectualism. This is what I'd call faux intellectualism, where someone puts on such airs and graces. I hate the word pretentious, because pretentiousness is in the eye of the beholder, but this is someone who puts on so many airs and graces, it is the embodiment of pretentiousness, and it's, oh, look at me, I'm the only type of person who will read a book by Jane Eyre, or Jane Austen, or whatever the fuck she's called, Jane Austen. Jane Eyre's one of her books.
First, let's talk about the... Sorry, this is an extract from the review. First, let's talk about the writing. Before I started reading, I was under the impression that this book had beautiful, in quotation marks, prose, because that's what I'd heard from countless people. What I would consider beautiful writing is The Night Circus, Ava Lavender, Arian Dante. is the type of writing that resonates with and is breathlessly easy to follow. But what I got in this book were gems like, I could have looked at his face all night, the way his eyes wrinkled at the corners, the place where his neck met his shoulder. And I'm going to say it as if I'm writing it here, because otherwise I don't think it quite has it. That place where his neck met his shoulder, someone please explain to me what that means. Also, add in a few, I let out a breath I didn't know I was holding, and you can basically sum up the writing in this book. Point being, I was bored, it elicited no emotion from me, and I had to drag myself through each chapter. Okay. I sobbed. I had red rings around my eyes. I was sniffing for a full 30 minutes after I'd finished reading this book. Zach's like, what's happened? Has somebody died? I'm like...
Yes!
The book I've just read. He's like, oh, for fuck's sake, I thought somebody had been hit by a car, like your mum or something. He just did a shit. Right? I was literally beside myself. Beside myself. And I was. Because you were like, you're alright. And I'm like, it's just
I was like, you come down like someone has, like, you've found out someone's been hit by a fucking car.
I cried into my banoffee pie. Okay? I don't cry into my banoffee pie unless a long-lost love has decided to leave me after coming back saying that he loves me and he's like, no, I don't want to be with you anymore and it's not you, it's me.
Or it's you. Only time. So who is this long-lost love? I'm going to fucking kill him.
It's you.
Well, this sobbing into your banoffee pie, this is where I interject. You only cry into a banoffee pie is when you love it so much.
No, even then I don't cry. Not well,
you,
sobbing.
You actually, it took ages for you to realise you had banoffee pie next
to you. I know, because I was so enthralled in this book that I couldn't possibly realise there was banoffee pie next to me, which usually would take me away from literally anything. Like, Zach could be standing there, full on hard on going, let's go, and I'm like, but banoffee pie. Like, nothing takes me away from banoffee pie, but this book, I was like, book.
Mix that banoffee pie with my dick, no, banoffee pie.
But it's the same thing. And I was sobbing into the book. I'm surprised I didn't get tears on the book and they're all like congealed together. I was sobbing into my banoffee pie. I sobbed into me fag afterwards. I sobbed into everything. I basically sobbed into Zach's shoulder and he don't even know what the fuck's going on because I'm like, it's just so sad. And he's like, huh? I didn't know what's
happened. Have you got tears in your eyes?
Yes. This wasn't even a tear comes to the eye. Oh, it's just hay fever. This was like big, wet, heavy tears.
Yeah, it seems like you're taking ages from when I gave you the initial call of fags ready, and it took, you must have been composing yourself.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is what you've got to remember. When I am reading a book that is genuinely really capturing me, and I'm towards the end, and I know what's going to happen because I've read the film, fuck's sake. I've watched the film, I know what's going to happen, and I'm sat there, and I'm, like, longing it out because I want to take my time with every word, with every sentence, with every paragraph. I don't want it to end because I don't want the life to end and I don't want the love story to end and it's really, really sad and I think I might cry. It's just so frustrating. And then people say that because she said that place where his neck met his shoulder, I'd like to inform you the place where his neck met his shoulder for a disabled quadriplegic man is the crease on the bottom of your neck, whereby your collarbone effectively meets your neck. That's where his shoulder meets his neck. Okay? I know that. Because I'd want to clean it just in case it got dirty under there. Alright? If you look at yourself in the mirror, doesn't matter if you're fat or thin, it helps if you're fat because extra rolls. Doesn't matter whether you're fat or thin, you know the bit where your neck meets your shoulder. Surely. Surely.
You're off your tits.
Do you know where my neck meets my shoulder? I'm not off my tits. I'm just very, very passionate about this. Do you know where my neck meets my shoulder? Can you see it? Is it evident?
Yeah.
So why doesn't she understand?
She just wants a pick, doesn't she? Make herself airs and graces that she's better than this book.
Well, fuck her. Look, I'm going to move on from that review because apparently I'm off my tits.
No, I love it. I love it.
I am just very passionate. It's nothing to do
the
with
thing
anything
is,
else.
What she means by the pros is she is...
She doesn't understand what the name... What the word pros means.
Well, she thinks
that
pros is a certain thing to her in her mind's eye, and she's read this, and it's like when I read something by Jesse Keane, I used to be like, there's not much value, really, or validity behind these easy, entertaining books. And I read the Jesse Keane book, and I was like, oh, my God, there is so much literary value to this. She's basically saying, this isn't of a literary-type book. Keep away from it.
No, what she's saying is she doesn't like it. And that's okay that she doesn't like it. But my point is don't diss the prose, because it's not your thing. There is prose in every book. Isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say that it's not prose.
Well, there is good prose and bad prose, but I think what she's...
In your opinion, though?
No, yeah. But there is good prose and bad prose, but she's obviously just picking at straws here and thinks this is her conveying her superiority and her intellectualism.
Mental, man. Mental. which, like I said earlier, will segue quite nicely into Zach's point.
What about Stephanie
Myers? I can't find the review for that one. Point is, everybody shits on Stephanie Meyer.
Because it's
don't
a
think
young
she's
adult
just...
novel. And
no, this is the thing.
Bracket.
Everybody shits on her. Why? Because it's Twilight and it's like fan fiction, whatever you call it. And it's all like, all girly and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, look, please. She's actually a relatively
good
writer.
Well, isn't everything fan fiction in this day and age? Something is inspired by something. It reinvented the vampire genre more than... what is her name? Anne Rice... Anne Rice wrote about romantic vampires in the vein of Interview with a Vampire. But anyway, segueing on to her final what?
Do you want me to, like, give a quick view or do you want to go into it?
Go for it.
So, a couple of things have happened recently whereby Zach's like, what the fuck? People are making mountains out of molehills. I nearly said it the wrong way around then. People are making mountains out of molehills. A lot of people at the moment are looking for confrontation everywhere they go. And something that really frustrates the hell out of me, and actually in this sense I'm really quite lucky that my friends on Facebook are either very rarely on Facebook or never comment on anything. Same with Twitter, I have very few followers. I'd be quite happy to have more followers, but in some ways I'm kind of glad because it means I don't have to get this shit on an almost daily basis. Mm. Look, the deal is that the Muppets is something that Zach grew up with and loved and still does love. They have changed the voices of the Muppets. Kermit doesn't sound like Kermit anymore.
No matter how much this geezer breaks the histrionics down, it's not
Hang
the same.
Hang on a minute. Kermit doesn't sound like Kermit anymore, and Zach just wanted to express his sadness and almost loss of something that he feels should have been kept the same. And in some ways, I feel that if you can't match what you've done, don't do any more.
Mm-hmm.
If you've lost a fantastic actor, actress, voiceover or anything else, just stop. Because in my eyes, that is better than trying to revamp it, reimagine it and bring it back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people decide to take it upon themselves to comment, like you say, with historic value, which is far from useful. So I'll let you take it from here.
Well, some woman who's a... We are all in this world of community. We're small fry in comparison, but certain people build up a public persona and name for themselves. And this one person in particular is known for being a film reviewer or someone who likes films and talks about it and is a on and off reviewer of such things and is of a different ethnicity, and I've always liked what she had to say on Facebook, and basically my innocent little thing was, I was basically saying, fuck, Kermit don't sound the same, and I'm just like, damn, can nothing be beloved anymore? All of a sudden, I got a really snide comment from her that basically said, oh no, change, we don't like change, run away, and I just replied with a thinking face, and she went, she continued with the snide remarks, and it was, again, politicised based upon her colour, based upon how everything is going societally and how fraught everything is. She felt that this was an appropriate place to place her own biased notions and agendas onto something as simplistic as me basically in just saying, oh fuck, they've changed Kermit's voice. Oh, woe be us.
Can I interject very quickly here? Something that I had a revelation about in the shower was that Zach's point is purely he loves something and he feels that it has been ruined. And that's all he meant by it.
The magic that was cast.
The magic that has been given to you by the Muppets.
And the original voice actors.
And the original voice actors. You feel, personally, has been ruined for you because that was your childhood.
And it goes into the autistic thing. I don't like change.
No, but nobody likes change. No. It's human nature to not like change.
Yeah.
And it's unfair to pick on someone purely because... I mean, they probably don't even know anything about the Muppets.
No, probably not.
They've got no factual evidence about anything. They just want an excuse to say something, to spark up an argument, because their day is probably incredibly boring.
Well, I didn't reply in my usual reactionary fashion, because I was just left so bamboozled. But I did say, look, this is obviously an insecurity of yours, and you've misplaced this, or you're imposing this from another situation or area that has upset you. But I did say, you need to get a grip. And this person unfriended me, so I got hold of him, and I said, so, in the face of me basically pulling you up on your behaviour, you unfriended me. And she went, I can't be bothered to argue. And I said, fair enough, you do you, goodbye, have a good evening. But the thing is, why is it politicised? Why have you turned this molehill and this molehill into a mountain? Why have you just obliterated me? Also made me feel guilty about something that I didn't. I wasn't my intention, and it was all politicised. It was obviously something that she wanted to impose onto me. She basically wanted to craft an issue out of something so innocuous.
Don't say in a message I didn't want an argument if you started the sodding thing.
Yeah. And I said that to her as well. But then I decided, you know what? It will cause an argument. Yeah, did mention it a little bit low. Yeah, so I did. I ended up just blocking her because I don't want that negativity around me. Also, this goes into something else about a notoriety of oneself. I added someone recently on Facebook and then I got queried about it and I was like, look, I don't know you, we just had loads of mutual friends. I just thought it would be cool. About 3-4 days later, gets hold of me and basically describes Zach A. Ferguson. Basically, I noticed this guy has 5,000 friends. A lot of the people are the people who say really nasty things about me. And he basically came back and said, you're that toss bag, you're that arsehole, you're that jerk. Or, I thought you were that arsehole and that toss bag. But no, you're that really cool writer dude. And I said, no, actually, to be honest, from what you've heard from me, I probably am that toss bag. I said, but I like people to judge me on their own individual engagements with me rather than what they've heard about other people. I said, so I could be this toss bag. I most probably am this toss bag.
And this goes back again to the fad thing.
Mm.
Hate him because somebody else told you to hate him.
Which I don't know why it's still going on about me.
But the thing is it, regardless of that point, and yeah, you're absolutely right, but regardless of that point, let's just take a step back for a second. If somebody says to you, don't like that person, if they haven't got a good reason, then you make your own sodding mind up.
Mm.
And if I had seen or heard anything that I've since seen or heard about Zach, not for a moment would I go, everybody else hates him, he's a massive arsehole.
Mm.
I'd get to know you on a one-to-one level.
Yeah.
And if I then decide that you're an arsehole and I don't want to be associated with your name or have anything to do with you, that's my choice.
Yeah.
And I think this is the thing. Sorry, I'm just going to... We'll come back.
It's
I'm just
all right,
track slightly. Is... You've got these people that are like, follow me. Do what I say.
Clips.
You must not like this person. You must not like that person. You must not like this movement or that movement.
Be careful of this guy because he did this or that, which...
But then people are saying, I want my independence. I want to say what I want to say.
Yeah.
I want to make my decisions. Well, don't do one, say one thing and do another.
Yeah. And that's always been my
issue. Don't shout about your independence and your opinion and your this, that and the other and then join a group that hates on Dolly Parton because she liked Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake. Yeah. If you don't like Zac Ferguson, don't listen to this podcast because it's a waste of your fucking time. If somebody told you not to like Zac Ferguson, I suggest you get to know him on a one-to-one level, because until you have done that, your point is invalid and fuck off.
Mm, yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, and it was just rather, it was like, I've had such a good year. And since all of that...
Because me!
Since I cut out all that negativity, and there was a time, wasn't there, where it came and crawled back on me. I was baited by a certain side of things, and luckily enough I have Laura here as a support, and I thought, you know what, instead of validating or trying to rationalise things or talk things, I just cut them off because I am not being baited, I am not being pulled into this bloody melodrama.
There are so many people that come back into Zach's life or come into Zach's life seeming innocent,
mm-hmm.
and that for somebody, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, so please don't take it this way, but somebody who is autistic takes it very simply and very plainly.
Yeah, literally.
Thank you. And actually, people know that they can bait Zach with, I want you to come on a podcast and talk about books or films.
Yeah.
And books and films are Zach's thing. So, and I don't mean that an autistic thing, because I'm not sure
I'd about like my that. Books.
But it's his thing. It's what he loves. It's what he enjoys. So what does he do? He goes, oh, yeah, books and films.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't see that background. Sometimes as a non-autistic person, you can't see that background, for Christ's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
But as an autistic person, it must be much harder. And I can only try and understand from what I've learned from physically watching you in these situations is... you're not seeing the overall picture.
No,
and actually,
until it's too late.
It's not until you share that information with me and you go, this is the situation, and together we look at it and we break it down and you go, oh, shit.
And someone makes out that they're a friend or they're with me, and then I go back to a history of their old podcast and it's anything but. If they were actually my friend and had my back...
Exactly.
They
exactly.
did speak up for me when it was actually
exactly.
shit on Zach half an hour, and it got to a point where Laura said, just don't watch it, don't listen to it. This I is couldn't. Enough. You couldn't.
No, I couldn't listen to it. Well, I did for a little bit, but I stopped because it made me angry. Because... I don't like manipulative people, and I certainly don't like manipulative people when they use somebody's disability or...
But those same people say, I don't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't... it's so frustrating. I don't like the fact that they're like, oh, yeah, Zach, he can be manipulated. What, because he's really autism? Reactionary. Because he's autistic? Because he can be a little bit reactionary? Because sometimes... you know, temper comes out of control, and I don't mean that in any other way than just saying shit that perhaps should not have been said at certain times.
Mm.
It's just, they know your weak points, and they'll pick at them. But the hardest thing, I personally think, from my point of view, looking at you and looking at those situations, is the reason why they're your weakest points is because you can't see all the time why they're your weakest points and how people try and get in that way.
Yeah.
And there have been times where we've disagreed about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. And you're like, but yes. And I'm like, but no.
Yeah.
And we have had really lengthy conversations about don't, because this is what I think. And sometimes it comes across as if I just don't want you to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And that's awful, because I am more than happy for you to talk to all and sundry. I couldn't give a toss who you talk to.
Mm.
But when it comes to manipulating you to fulfil their wants...
Yeah.
I'm angry.
Yeah.
And that's where, cast back to listening to the last All Sorts of Emotions episode about the whole, you know, protective thing.
Yeah.
Not, I'm stopping you.
No, not at all. I don't feel that.
I'm suggesting,
this
is my opinion, take it or leave it,
but
this is what I think.
Yeah.
And then you make your own decision.
Yeah.
But...
Well, the right decision usually is the most, objective one, is how you see it.
But I think for you, with the whole autism thing, and I didn't mean to go into this too much,
that's
but
right.
You are very literal.
Mm-hmm.
Literary, fuck's sake. You're very literal. You're very... I don't like saying simple thinking, because it makes you sound like you're simple and stupid, and you're not. But your thinking pathways are very straightforward, very one way, mm-hmm. very one avenue, and there's no other way around it. You don't necessarily always see the bigger picture.
No.
And
until it's too late.
Exactly. Or unless I've managed to kind of get in and give you my opinion beforehand sort of thing.
Which I feel so lucky that I have you in that sense now.
Yeah. You feel lucky, but for me, it's really hard to get that. There is such a fine line between being the controlling girlfriend and the helpful girlfriend. Yeah. And trying to walk that line sometimes is so rickety.
Yeah.
Because for me personally, when I say to you, don't talk to that person, you're like, huh? Yeah. And it does, it seems to me like I'm being controlling, but I'm trying to protect you. But then sometimes I'm like, do I not protect you and let you do it and make the mistake? But then it hurts me when you're hurting.
I hurt anyway. Because...
No, I know. But look, the thing is manipulative people are out there.
And do you think it's because I'm quite open about my...
Yeah, it is. And we are open. As a couple, we're open about your autism. You are open about your autism.
Mm.
It's not something that you hide away. No. It's not something that you pretend that doesn't exist. Yeah. I'm sure you'd like to think that, you know, to pretend that it doesn't exist sometimes, and I understand that. But it is something you're very open about. And actually, this is something that's come up with a couple of people recently where I've said I feel that they are using that openness to their advantage to take advantage of you, to manipulate you, to make you do something that if you were me, you wouldn't do. And in their eyes, this is not my view, but in their eyes, if you were normal, I wouldn't be able to do this, but you're not normal, so it's all right.
Yeah, I
can get in there because he's weak.
Yeah.
And you're not. But unfortunately, autism brings weaknesses because you can't see necessarily outside the box.
Yeah.
And you are very, there's the line of thinking, there's the path I'm going to follow, and fuck everything else around me.
Yeah.
And in that, you have little people that are flying in behind you, and you've got no fucking clue. And you turn around, look at them, and go, haha, books, Blu-rays, which makes you seem stupid, but you're not. It's just that you can't always see those outside factors.
Yeah.
And that is frustrating as hell. Yeah. And this is the thing, I think people know you as an online presence to be, sorry, but reactionary, to be...
Hot-headed.
Yeah,
put
hot-headed.
People in their place. And a lot of people think that I get a weird kick out of it.
But they know they're going to get that from you.
Yeah.
And for me personally, whether this is what anybody else agrees with or whether you agree with it, Zach, but... For me personally, giving them what they want is the ultimate, like, yes, I got what I want. And I hate giving people what they want unless they ask for it nicely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's so true.
It's the same thing. Somebody walks in, I've got a chocolate bar in my hand. If somebody walks in and goes, oh, I love that. Could I just have a little bit? I'd probably be like, yeah, go on then.
Mm.
I hate it when someone goes, oh, I love that chocolate. I wish I had the money for that chocolate. Oh, yeah.
When it comes to chocolate, you wouldn't break a brick off for anyone.
I have.
For me.
Yeah. But my point...
I know your point.
You're making my point moot.
No, I'm not.
Look, my point is the fact that when somebody comes round behind me and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm having such a bad day. I wish I had some chocolate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just walk in and go, can I have a piece, please?
Yeah.
Because although I think you're a bit ballsy, and actually I want you to fuck off and leave my chocolate the hell alone, I'd probably be like, yeah, all right then.
Yeah.
But when somebody comes up, but you don't necessarily see that in your mind, because you're like just the book or the film.
Or talk about it, or the philosophy of writing. And.
But then I don't like the fact that somebody comes in and they're like, I know that he's going to react. So they do that whole like, I'm going to prod you, and I'm going to prod you again, and I'm going to keep prodding you until eventually you punch me, metaphorically.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to
They know from past endeavours and that. But also, the thing that really worries me and scares me is everything is
taken... Without you, me, you'd be nothing.
They take everything out of context, and then that context becomes a reality. And then even close friends start then claiming, yeah, you said that. And it's like, do your due fucking diligence. Listen to the podcast. I did not call anyone to see you next Tuesday. Yes, you did. Everyone in the comment section saying you did. And someone who supposedly meant to be your friend is now on the side because it suits their agenda.
Yeah. It's when it suits their agenda, or it suits what the fad is currently,
yeah,
to like or hate or whatever else, yeah, and it drives me
yeah, mad. The thing is, if my name's at the end of your tongue...
How can I assure you your name probably isn't at the end of Zach's?
No, because I've progressed a lot in a year, and I have grown in a year. And, you know, with all that negative shit, it needs to happen. But it's not... It's the truth is, there's still moments in life where I am left so baffled. And I do hurt deeply, because I'm not there to make a mountain out of a molehill. I'm not like that.
Mm.
I'm just a very passionate person. But I believe in what I believe in, and I believe in being truthful, and I believe in putting people in their place, but not to such the extent that I used to. But people wanting that from me...
But they know that that's your weak spot.
Yeah.
They know that if they say something that is contradictory or that makes you feel like shit, they know you're going to react.
Mm.
And that's the thing I hate. It's like, I mean, it is. There are some things. It's like when an army attacks another army. They don't go for the strongest bit, do they? They go for the weakest flanks.
Yeah.
And I do get that. But don't do that to the detriment of other people.
Yeah.
Because overall, we should be respecting each other. There are some people that we dislike in this world. But actually, if there were less manipulative people, we'd probably dislike much more people.
Yeah.
Dislike much less
people. And I'm not going to lie. I see people who are still associated with these certain people. And I feel there's a disloyalty there and that they've distanced from me. But it's not for me to make that decision. It's for them to make that decision, and I hope that they may see...
They're going to learn from their mistake at some point.
Yeah. So back to the whole... What was it about? People feeling the necessity to blow things out of proportion. They do it because maybe they have very little in their life, or it's misplaced, or they want to stand out. People in this world, an opinion online is... a dangerous thing, a necessity. Everyone is in their right to opinion, but I don't feel it is when it's at a detriment to communication.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is like the whole tie up to this point. Just.
But nobody wants to have an opinion in order to just have an opinion anymore.
Or to discuss or debate. Yeah. Yeah,
we do. And that's why we do this podcast. That's the whole point of this podcast.
Yeah.
But the thing is nowadays people want an opinion because people express their opinions because they want the conflict.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it should be.
No.
If you have an opinion, have your, you know, this is the thing. Back in the day, there used to be debate after school clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we need to learn to debate,
mm-hmm,
to have good reasons for and against something,
yeah,
and you debate for the part that you are playing.
Yeah.
And that is fine, okay? You don't like the fact that Kermit the Frog sounds different. For me, it doesn't affect me very much because I don't have much affiliation or love with the Muppet.
Yeah.
But I can understand where you're coming from, Zach. That's a very good point, Zach. However, for me, I don't have much affiliation. End of conversation.
But instead, someone felt the need to go, oh, you don't like change, run away. Basically saying that I'm what? I'm some crybaby who's then politicising it. I'm not the type to go out there and start screeching and blubbing about something as redundant as a change in the voice. It's all in jest, or it's all in, you know... People don't know me, though. People don't want to take time to know me.
They don't want to get to know you. They just want to argue.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, and I cannot stress this enough, there is a difference between arguing and conflict and debating and expressing opinions.
Yeah. I think that's beautifully summarised. I think we should tie it up.
We love you.
We love you.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the listeners.
Our listeners love you.
Like fuck. Anyway, look, we've had a wonderful 90-minute session with you. I'm sure you're probably very bored of hearing our voices and probably very bored of hearing me being very passionate and apparently off my tits.
Oh, has that got to you? I didn't mean for it to get to you.
So?
No, seriously, has that got to you? I wasn't meaning for it to get to you. It's me just joking.
It's fine. So, it's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me. And when I stop recording this, she's probably going to tell me why she doesn't like me referring to her as off her tits. Why are you off your tits?
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Look after each other. And don't go into comment section just because you want to argue.
No conflict.
No passion.
No passion? You've got to have passion. Just no negative passion.
Yeah.
Stop longing it out. Press the stop button.
I've
bye, everyone.
I've got to wait till it hits.
Bye, guys.
No, no.
Bye.
No, no.
That was Zach and Laura with Articulate Warbling. Hey, Laura, I didn't cut you off this time, so hey, we're cool, right? Thanks, everyone, for listening to Articulate Warbling, recorded in Brighton, England, edited, kind of, in Portland, Oregon, and produced on the internet. Check out Zach at sweatdrenchedwriter.com. And check him out on the Instagram at sweatdrenchedwrit. I am at pgttcm.com. Just hit the spring on my microphone. pgttcm.com and pgttcm. Whatever. Actually, no, not dot whatever. pgttcm on most social media platforms. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your continued listening. Let us know. Go to Articulate Warbling on Facebook and let us know that you're listening. Zach and Laura need catchphrases. They need to answer listener mail. They need to have some interactions. And also, I would love an episode where they just talk about British food. Appetizer? That sounds awful. I mean, I know it's an apple soda, but I've had Orangetizer and it was god awful. Like Orangetizer and Chicagoland pizza when I was living in Iceland. Oh, oh man. They're like, hey, you like British food, right? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, Orangetizer, Chicagoland pizza. Worst thing ever. Articulate Warbling with Zach and Laura. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I sound like I'm off my tits.